This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch for more instructions. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Everybody on board and ready for today's show?
We are.
Ready to go.
All right. We will begin with an excerpt from the March 18, 2006 channeling. Kuo says, "You are not a person seeking enlightenment. You are a person seeking yourself. To put it another way, you stand within flesh, looking out of your physical eyes and hearing through your physical ears, and consequently you feel that you are a person of flesh and blood, limited by the senses that you experience as part of your physical body. We would say to you that our perception of you is entirely different. In our perception, you are extremely powerful and magical beings. Even within flesh, you have within you the ability to access the divine. This is because your very nature is love."
Thank you, Gary. Be that the hardest single realization we ever come to is that embodied in this quote. We are not physical beings experiencing, at times, a spiritual viewpoint. We're spiritual beings experiencing a physical viewpoint. However, this physical viewpoint has completely overtaken us. Body in our culture encourages the spiritual modality of thinking. Although people talk about spirit, people talk about religion, which isn't spiritualism at all, by the way, but they're only talking about, for the most part, they're talking about points of belief that you're supposed to pick up if you're part of that religion. Tiny as whether or not Jesus is physically present at communion have divided the church for centuries. We can't let that divide us. We can't really enter into religion except in our own way. We can't be dogmatic believers and still feel that we are spiritual beings. Which happens to have gotten ourselves into a world of trouble, literally. When we entered into birth here, signing up for boot camp, if we succeed, we will have done something that's truly difficult. And we will be very happy with ourselves because we woke up and we realized that we honestly, no kidding, feel ourselves to be spiritual beings. Can we believe that? we have bodies that mean that we're like bumper cars. Try as we might, we just bump off of each other as we go through life without being able to absorb each other in any physical way. Even in the act of love, a man can do no more than park at the shore of the ocean of life as he enters a woman's infinite reaches tucked within her so carefully in the vagina and the womb. The ability to give life resides in her. And man seeks that endlessly, not so that he can become pregnant and all that, but because he wants to experience infinity. And a woman experiences that miracle when she becomes pregnant and delivers birth to an actual living being that had no beingness whatsoever before she allowed this enter her body and her mind. Only women experience miracles of a physical kind that may lead them to think of themselves as a spiritual being, somehow outside of the body, outside of the limitations of the flesh, living as citizens of eternity. And yet, how then do you explain if we have no beingness except the body? The times when we have seen that body transcended, a woman picks up the front end of a car to free her child, to the news from time to time, or something like it. Where does she get all that extra energy? Where does it come from? Not from a human source, certainly. She transcends the laws of physicality. The explanation can only be spiritual. Thing as simple as knowing who's on the phone and being right. How often has this happened to you? You think of somebody, they call you up, the transaction is complete, and you're connected. How does that happen? Is that a mere coincidence? But how does it happen over and over again? How is that? It can't be explained except by talking about senses beyond the physical. And how great is that? Haven't we been hoping for that? Seeking for that? Wanting that? As we seek for the Creator, as we seek for what's real, why we're here, all those big questions, who are we? They can only be taken up and talked about with any satisfaction, hopeful in the outcome, if you accept that we are spiritual beings. Because our reason here cannot be physical. Our physical lives and dies. That's it. We know that. We, as we appear now, will age and we will die. We will leave this realm never to return as this particular being. What happens to us? Do we just wink out like a candle? All that work, all that witnessing, all that concentrated thought, coming to various conclusions, having aha experiences, moving from level one to level two, and so forth as we rate our own spiritual progress. Now, there has to be a metaphysical answer to these questions. And thank heavens, there really is. And those who have read the raw material and been grateful to it are among those who have been able to follow the reasoning of those amazing and considerable presences known as Ra. They say that indeed we are spiritual. Spirits trapped within flesh for the duration of a lifetime. For what? To experience. To experience what? To experience love. Feel love, to be loved, to feel compassion so that we may serve them, find ways to be good to them, to love them. And to accept the love offerings of others, as Ra put it, which is a harder lesson to learn than how to love. We even have the instinct to stop people from complimenting us. No, no, they say, no, don't do that. Don't compliment me. I don't deserve that. But you do. You are worthy. You deserve all the compliments in the world. Good to share this space with you and this vibration. It is good to share your curiosity and ponder your questions. Thank you for this time. Dear spirits, we are here to serve. That is our hope and our purpose. Amen.
Thank you so much, Carla. Our first question today comes from James S. that was submitted through email. James says, I'm so happy to have been exposed to the law of one material. It resonates with me to my core and has helped change my life. I read with interest the sections on healing. As a veterinarian, I would like to apply energetic healing to my second density life form patients that I see every day. The question is, does Carla think the energetic healing described by Ra would be successful with animals as mind-body complexes, or would the healing only apply to mind-body-spirit complexes? And he goes on to say, thanks to everyone at LL Research for all you do.
Well, I guess I'd better start off then. I would say yes, that energetic healing has to do with vibrations and energies, which animals feel fully, feeling that. They would have a problem perhaps understanding English, but they don't have a problem understanding our feelings. They identify with them, they pick them up, they learn them, they become able to transact love with us, and we have all experienced the incredible pure devotion of animals. If they can love, then we can love them and we can heal them or give them the opportunity to heal themselves. Now, this would be a subconscious or unconscious conclusion on the part of the animal where he would not be able to, you know, bring a will into that. But his body might want to heal and be glad for the opportunity and take it. So I see no reason why an animal could not feel the vibrations of those energetic exercises that Ra offers. Guys?
I think I would agree with you. To shed some light on where James's question is coming from, he makes a distinction between animals being mind-body complexes versus mind-body-spirit complexes. which Ross says that at the point an animal is inspirited is when it is available to harvest to third density and then becomes a mind-body-spirit complex as opposed to a second density mind-body complex. And so when Ra describes how healing works within the recipient, they refer to the individual as a mind-body-spirit complex. So one might get the understanding that this healing is only for mind-body-spirit complex. But at another point when they're talking about healing, they talk about how distortions can be between the spirit and the mind, or also between the mind and the body. And so I feel like energy healing could help soothe those distortions between the mind and the body if an animal is still just a mind-body complex without the realization of the spirit. But I also think that just the attempt to heal, even if it's futile in the face of any sort of metaphysical mechanics, could still serve as a pure expression of love, which would serve both the healer and the animal and the whole planet, I think.
I think that if a mind can be distorted, or if a body can be distorted, or if distortions can exist between those two complexes, then necessarily those distortions can be healed logically, and necessarily the distortions would not exist without also the concomitant trouble with spirit.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good word. Without the companion of the what?
The capacity to heal. If you have the capacity to get distorted, then you have the capacity to heal. And if those distortions arise as a result of your life path as a mind-body complex, I don't know how well mind-body complexes can self-heal, but they have to be amenable to healing by third density efforts. There's also a quote that kind of hints at that in session 98, question 12. It's one of the many questions that Don was asking about Don and Carla and Jim's cat Gandalf. And Don is asking Ra if there's anything that the group can do to alleviate Gandalf's problems other than surgical. And Ra advises continuing in praise and thanksgiving and says that there's two outcomes. And the first outcome, Ra says, is basically that Gandalf will pass away. And the second outcome, Ra says, is that, quote, the life path may become that which allows the healing. So again, I think Ra here is indicate the healing of the mind-body complex.
That's right. He did that, say that. Now, Gandalf was an 18-year-old cat, and his life force was weak. The only thing I think that kept him alive for the last couple years of his life was his love for me and for Don. For me, most of all. He needed to be with me at all times. If I was in another room, he would move to be in the room with me, no matter how difficult that was. And I will never forget the sound of his nails scraping along on the kitchen linoleum from the bedroom to the living room down this hall. It was painful that I had forgotten him and that he had to do that, basically to wiggle until he fell off the bed and then crawl. But he was determined. He had every possibility of being healed, but I think his body was just too weak. I think the life force was too dim. He did die. He did pass away in March of 84.
The will can go so far in transcending limits or going beyond boundaries, but sometimes those boundaries have to be honored.
Mm-hmm.
Limitations aren't gone beyond. I've noticed that pattern of cats needing to be near you out of a sense of devotion and love, I presume, since I've been here in Louisville as well. I think that has continued beyond, that tradition has continued
beyond
Gandalf.
I have no idea how I inspire that. I don't, people say I don't deserve it. I don't. I'm just regular social like anybody else. But cats and dogs, animals in general, small children, bond to me with extreme easiness and love being with me. So I've noticed that all my life. There's nothing, I think rather than my being, you know, having some gift, I think it's, I'm simple. I have remained a fairly simple being who just loves everybody. And I don't have a lot of questions. I have had my faith in one place since I was a toddler and saw Jesus in person, in spirit, and bonded to Jesus in spirit and in flesh. I resolved that every day of my life I would serve the love I saw in that man's eyes. Inspired me beyond all belief and all hope of anything I could ever hope to come to understand. And I was there. You know, I didn't have anywhere to go. People think, well, surely you're curious. You know, oh, no, I'm not. Left to myself, I wouldn't learn a new thing between now and when I die. People poke me with a stick and get me to read things, and I learn new things, and I'm glad of it. But of my own self, I'm just not inspired to seek out this or that and learn more about this or that. And I think it's wonderful that people have this divine curiosity. I know Don was such a person, and Gary is such a person. He always has questions, and they're usually pretty sophisticated and interesting questions that you can chew on for a while. I value Winfrey, a person I do a lot of work with, because he is endlessly curious. I don't value the conclusion he comes to. I value his curiosity. But I don't have it. I rest. And kids find that, you know, something they can relate to. They're curious about everything, but that's the same thing as being curious about nothing. You know, you're just curious across the board. Okay, tell me anything. You know, why is the sky blue? I don't know anything. Tell me. I want to know everything. I'm totally innocent, you know. Give me something. And they ask endless questions of you, endless questions. But I have that gift of love and living in love and open-heartedness, and I think small children and pets relate to that. So right there is an indication that pets are sensitive to spirit. That's not a physical trait, you know, at all. That is totally created mentally.
Jim, did you have anything to add to the question?
One small thing. I think if the pet that, or the animal is a pet that the veterinarian is seeing, that he might have better luck with energetic healing than if it were, say, a farm animal that was not a pet, you know, a herd animal or something. I think that the addition of a spirit complex does aid the possibility in the animal being healed, in that it's able to take part more consciously and fully in the process.
Do you think that it can pick up the will of the person that wants it to heal?
I think that's one of the advantages, yeah, of the animal having a spirit complex there.
They can pick up the will.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. If my owner wants me to do it, I want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I mean, 'cause the sense of love for or belief in, confidence in the healer, I think can facilitate your own ability to accept the healing. And there may be that sort of bonding or receptivity to the will between second density and third density entities.
Yeah.
Gary brought up Gandalf, the Gandalf questions in the Law of One, and I might suggest to James or anybody else curious about this kind of topic to read the Gandalf questions because on the surface they seem kind of personal, but there's some pretty good nuggets in there for anybody curious about human-pet relations and the metaphysical backdrop behind that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Those are in the few sessions as we are doing the last of the sessions. We were experiencing Gandalf getting worse.
Mm-hmm. An easy way for anybody wanting to do that can go to lawofone.info, Toby Wheelock's database, and just type in Gandalf in the search engine.
Oh, yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, don't type in Gandalf into Google. Right. You're not going to get the law.
Folktale creatures.
Yeah. So our next question comes from Folk Love, who submitted their question via Bring Forth. Folk Love says, do you think you have to love everyone and everything in order to find lasting joy in life? If so, how do you go about doing this? To me, I think the question is about finding lasting joy and how love relates to lasting joy. And to focus on lasting joy, enduring joy, the kind of joy that is not going to be diminished or increased by circumstance, per se. That kind of joy, to the best of my understanding, derives from releasing your identification with the small I and discovering who you really are beyond, as Eckhart Tolle would say, name and form. Because I think all manner of misery and non-joy stems from this, from identification with that I, and all the grasping and the needing and the projection into the future and the worry about the past and the avoiding and all that attention-stealing activity that makes one miss the present moment. So in discovery of who you really are, the self that you really are, I think joy arises and that space is created for love to come through as well, because as the opening the opening quote said, you are love at your core. So discovering who you really are is also discovering love, though your being goes beyond love. Love is what I guess you might call an aspect or a primal distortion of your being, but nevertheless, it's so synonymous at that point, I think, that you can say that you are love. Love created you, etc. And love, in getting to that place that I described, the disidentification from mind, from thought form, from the small I, love is a key and necessary part of that process. It's a grand central station through which you must go. And love is something that can be practiced and learned, like you can practice a piano or practice any ability. And in that practice, love is an act of will. I think it becomes natural and effortless. It just sort of emanates from our being. But we third density entities have to, it's an act of volition to learn love and to practice love. If you look at Ra's instructions about love, they're four general exercises. When in exercise one they say the moment contains love, they follow that by saying that the exercise is to consciously seek that love in awareness and understanding distortions. Exercise two, they say, see the creator when looking at the universe. Exercise three, they say, see the creator when gazing within a mirror. Exercise four, they say, see the creator when gazing at the creation. Those are all action words. They all involve some initiation by the will that sets that process of learning to love and experiencing love into motion. Ra talks about the entity laying their cards down upon the table in their poker game metaphor. Again, there's action there. That they say that the game can only be won by those who lay their pleasures, their limitations, their all upon the table, face up, and say inwardly, all of you players, each other self, whatever your hand, I love you. This is the game, to know, to accept, to forgive, to balance, and to open the self in love. So I think joy and love are two strands of the same thread, inextricable, and I see lasting joy as a measure of your renunciation and disidentification with the illusory I, the fictional I, and love is a huge, integral, indispensable part of that.
I think that the idea of loving everyone and everything and the idea of lasting joy are both ideals, and they might be kind of unrealistic ideals in our current environment. Certainly, attempting to find love in every moment, as Gary was talking about, Ra suggesting, could lead to joy, and it has in my experience, definitely. But we're here on Earth, and we have a very wide emotional spectrum. Some positive emotions and some negative emotions. Some are happy, some are sad, and some we want to experience, and some are very unpleasant to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And our, as Gary was talking about in the exercise, the goal for positively polarizing beings is to find love within those experiences and accept it and love it, or control it for the negative polarizing entities. But I do think, as Folklove is asking, how do you go about this, even if it isn't something that is realistic, to have lasting joy in this life? I think there's very few individuals who could say that. Gary mentioned Eckhart Tolle. There's a few other mystics who seems to have completely dissolved their little I, as Gary was calling it. But for most of us, I think that it's a...
alive and well.
a lifelong, disciplined seeking of this love, where we will be experiencing moments where we don't feel joy, and those moments are what we're here in third density to really experience and to love, to find love in those moments where it's not apparent, and I don't think it will get to a point where it will always be apparent. And when we do, we'll probably reach a point where we don't need to be in third density anymore.
Yeah.
I think one concept that has really helped me, and talking to Gary, I know that he's it's helped him as well, is this idea of an ever-observing and all-accepting self. This aspect of our consciousness that is always present, that we don't always realize is there, but if you can place your identity in that consciousness, you can experience anything and feel complete acceptance no matter what is going on with your little self. There's a larger self that is always observing and always accepting of whatever is going on. It realizes the drama that's happening to your little self, and it accepts it and it loves it. And I think that is to the love that Ra was talking about finding in each moment, is this aspect of the self that can see anything and see it as love. And for me, it took some pretty dedicated meditation to actually just get a small taste of this aspect of my own consciousness. Sitting in silence and turning my awareness back in on myself and trying to get deeper and deeper in the self before I realized that there was a part of me that was simply watching everything that happened to the little me.
The witness.
Right, yeah, it's the witness. And I think that if you meditate and keep up a disciplined meditation regimen, consciously explore your emotions at the end of the day, become familiar with the spectrum of emotions that you experience, while carrying the intention to balance and love these emotions and the experiences that brought them up, then that will help you find the love for everything and everyone, and that will help bring you to joy. And it might not be everlasting, but it will put us on that path, I believe.
Yeah, I think you need to be satisfied with feeling it at all. I find also that it helps to make a sharp differentiation between a person's essence and his behavior. You can see everybody as a soul and love the soul. Often it's difficult to love the behavior, and I'm not sure we're supposed to. Even though we're trying not to judge, we're trying to forgive. It's good to invoke forgiveness and to work on forgiveness and to work on healing that in ourselves so that we can forgive it in other people. Once we've found that other people are doing, we've found our inner murderer and asked it to work for us instead of just be part of the shadow side, for instance. And once we've redeemed that very strong negative part of ourselves, it really felt murderous towards someone, and then instead of backing away from it, really got into it and then asked it to work for us, redeemed it, gave it work to do, making us tough, which I think is a viable alternative to stuffing it away and hoping that you'll never be prompted to feel that again, you know, because we always will eventually feel that again. It's inevitable that we'll run into somebody that does something heinous to us or to someone we love and inspires that desire to slit his throat or just do away with him in some bloodless way, but at least get rid of him. And once you have not backed away from that wolf and really gone into that and then worked to heal yourself, worked to heal that emotion to the point of understanding it and forgiving it and redeeming it. At that point, when you've fallen in love with the real self, the self that has these emotions and that you need to work on, when you fall in love with that in yourself, I think it's more and more possible to love everybody. But really, it's not going to happen that we love everybody's behavior. And if we identify people with their behavior, we're stuck. You know, we are forever bound to judgment. In order to start invoking forgiveness, we have to see the ascendancy of that energy of love, to see that, you know, if we really are love, it really is ascendant, strongest. It is the most powerful thing. It's not naive to feel that the positive is the stronger of the two, because the stronger of the two would be the one that is original. And the negative is never original. The negative always takes its strength from going against something that is positive. It's always second in terms of what it uses for its, you know, emotional vocabulary. It's not an originally negative thing. It's always taking something positive and then turning it. So we have the strength of ascendancy, those of us who are seeking positivity. We can know that the positive does win out in the end because it has to. Total identification with what is. Negativity is identification, as Ross said, with what is not. So it's important to make that distinction between people as souls and people as active. Those who are active can make any kind of mistake, and you can be any kind of negative reaction, you know, irritated, annoyed, irked, whatever.
Same line of thinking. I think the 23rd Psalm is a good place in the Bible to find a way that has been suggested that we can make our peace with those things that may be difficult. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. or thy rod and thy staff are with me and comfort me. I think the rod and the staff there in our faith and will, the concepts that Rod talks about is faith and will. So if we decide with our conscious mind that we want to do a certain thing, we want to find peace with difficult entities or concepts around us, then we decide that, you know, like the old story that you've told us many times about Laura Kersey, you decided you're going to love her. She was a very difficult teacher in the library sciences, but by golly, it didn't take real long, and you did love her, and you learned a lot from her. So I think along that same line, we decide we want to do something, then we apply faith to that will, and we continue on with what is now a discipline or a practice, and we expand our ability to feel at ease with the world and the creation around us.
Yeah, the conscious use of the will, in the Ra quote Gary was referencing, Ra says, there will be some loss of power due to the flaws within the seeking it, and the distortions of insincerity. However, the conscious statement of self to self of the desire to seek love is so central an act of will that, as before, the loss of power due to this friction is inconsequential. So even just stating to yourself that your goal is to find love in the moment, even if there's a part of you that is insincere and you're identifying with some sort of negativity, stating that has a power.
Yeah, I think that ties into what Carla was saying about love being ascendant, the original, the primary. And so when we seek it, we ring that doorbell and we ring that cord, and the universe, being love, responds. And also, as a final comment for me, at least, I wanted to note and agree with what Austin and Carla were saying about realistically and probably lasting joy is something that may elude the third density entity. And something that Ra said has been standing out in my mind lately as I have dealt with sorrow. And Ra said that something along the lines of that they experience in their own, they have been through third density and they have experienced the, quote, joys and sorrows of this plane of experience. So it seems sorrow is par for the course here.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have anything to add to that question?
Mm-mm.
Just one last reiteration of a point Carla was making about approaching the shadow self. I think that the idea that we talk about here of finding love in every moment can sometimes be used to bypass negative emotions, to sort of gloss over any sort of negative emotions that we might feel and just sort of say, oh, yeah, love, it's all good, and sort of push away the negativity that we're finding in the moment. And a concept is called spiritual bypassing, I think, and I think it's really important to, once you recognize that shadow self, realize that that is something that you need to sort of explore and dive into and find love within that, because only going deep into that and then finding love when you're in the midst of it is what has the true power.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Good point.
Our next question comes from the phone. Actually, we have a couple of live callers. The first of which is area code 801. You are now not yet.
Hi, everybody.
Now unmuted. Hello, 801. With whom are we speaking?
Thank you. This is JP from Utah.
Hi. JP, how you doing?
Hi, JP.
Good. Hope everybody had a great Easter.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I'm calling is I got a kind of a related follow-up question. Last week you spent considerable time talking about the penal system and the haves and the have-nots and the power and the money and all that stuff, and it got me thinking about, to me, this seems so out of balance that there is a sector of our society who is totally immune to any type of accountability or prosecution. In 2008, Wall Street brought us down to our knees. The banking scandals and the housing things and AIG and all the stuff. And 6 years later, there still hasn't been one serious prosecution of all those people who stole and robbed and just fouled everything up.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, in your channeling with Ra and the other hierarchical powers that be, have any of them said maybe in a future world, a future 3D, the solars and the logos and the logoses and the hierarchy, maybe we'll throttle it back just a little bit, because it seems that sometimes it's just so out of balance that it's just, it seems like I'm not.
Well, yeah.
Can I see these things? It just angers me so much and puts me out of balance.
The solution is beyond us in third density. It's beyond us in fourth or fifth. Because in fourth or fifth density, the negative is sequestered, segregated completely from the positive, so that they can learn more and more about how to be negative, and we can learn more and more about how to be positive. So we get a relief from those who intend to be negative in fourth density. We get that in the next density, in the next experience, when we drop the body. And when we pick up the next body, it isn't chemical, it's spiritual. And we are aimed at positive fourth density, whereas those who are involved in those kind of scandals are almost sure to be aimed for negative fourth density graduation and fifth density, negative and positive, also sequestered. What happens is they bound their way confidently into sixth density, actually a negative sixth density, and kind to them, but it's not. It's the density of unity of what is. And love is what is. And they have predicated their entire system on love being a folly. They've jumped over the chakra of love. They've jumped over the open heart. No, no, no. They've closed that heart tight and locked the key and left it behind. And they work completely mentally. And they're very strong blue ray, very strong yellow ray. Very strong. But they can't do a doggone thing about the truth of unity. It just is. And that's the density. And they look all around, you know, for a place to hide. They can't find it. They finally have to give up being negative because it doesn't work. They can't learn anymore. And everybody wants to learn something new. So they get tired of being negative. They want to learn something. They switch over to being positive and embrace it with all their hearts. That's the final solution. And I don't think there's a solution before that really lasts.
Well, I think we have to remember that this third density planet that we're on right now is unique, and we're experiencing a lot more seeming indefinite negativity here than most third density planets do.
We're right at harvest.
Besides the second density population on this planet, 16 other planets provided their populations. Those 16 planets all failed to make third to fourth density graduation. So the Earth was seen as a place where they could try again. So we have a number of repeaters here, which means we have a situation in which a lot of people who have failed, you know, found a lot of failure in their past in seeking love and in seeking unity, are again here trying to work all of that out. And I think as to what Ra had to say about the percentage of possible graduates on the planet, they still haven't worked it out. So I think that's why we've got so much disharmony, so much the power of a few over many. It's been a pattern that has been repeated so many times before these populations got here to planet Earth. So I think that future and past and, you know, other third densities have a lot more harmonious types of polarity interplay, you might say, than this planet. And we can take some comfort in knowing that maybe we're going to survive probably one of the most difficult tests that could be offered in third density. There are two populations here who have destroyed, well, one, Maldek, destroyed its planet. The other, Mars, made its planet inhospitable to life. So those are the kind of energies we're dealing with.
One can only figure that they created a nuclear winter, as Carl Sagan termed it, that eventually snuffed out all life.
Yeah, it's a good point to bring up that the Logos is an experiment, basically. And when the Logos set up the parameters for the existence within the solar system, it didn't know that there were going to be two planetary populations that would ruin their planets. And now it knows, and that means the rest of the Logoi know, and so future Logoi hopefully will alter the parameters so it doesn't quite happen like that again. Seems like there is some sort of drive for efficiency when setting up parameters for different experiences.
Yeah, they were looking for the most efficient way to get from third to fourth density, the
right.
shortest. So it was the most difficult and tough way. But, you know, if you succeeded, it was the best way because it was very short. But it depended on your being able to see over the the apparent ascendancy of evil in this world and see and have faith in the eventual ascendancy of good and go with that. Just go with it regardless of what everything looks like. And that's pretty much what people do who ascend in third density to fourth density thinking. And that's pretty much what we need to do is concentrate on love and not worry about how fair everything is, because there's no sense in fussing about that. You can't do anything really to change it. You know, God bless this mess.
Well, we can work on ourselves, and like the saying here goes, think globally and act locally. Do what you can.
That's true. Yeah, you can't clean up the oceans in the world, but you could clean up Beargrass Creek, maybe, if you really worked hard and got a lot of people interested and were willing to put yourself out.
Pete Seeger cleaned up the Hudson.
Yeah, that's right. Amazingly enough, you did. It's clean. It's beautiful.
And friends.
But it took years of their going up and down the river collecting garbage and suing those people who were dumping raw sewage into the Hudson and so forth. And they had to have the money for that. They had to raise the money for that. Seeger sang his little heart out raising money for that. So God bless him.
And I believe that even just doing inner work, like JP, you were talking about how you feel anger and frustration about the situation. If you explore that, like we were just talking about, exploring the shadow side and attempting to find love within that, even if there's no real outer expression, you can't go and hug a banker that tanked the economy, but offering that to yourself offers it to the mass mind, which I believe has metaphysical implications, that expression of love, I think, will express itself somehow in the world.
I think that's a very powerful thought, and it's really, really important. What you said is the centrally important point. We need to think very carefully and set our minds towards thinking as purely positively as possible and our actions to follow the very most high and best thing we can see.
Yeah, I think the situation with regard to Wall Street, I think JP described it accurately, and I think it's symptomatic of a mixed polarity planet, and I would presume likewise that on other planets of mixed polarity that those of the negative polarity would act likewise. I think it's a hallmark to act in that manner. But Jim raised a really interesting point about how there are 16 different sources of people here, which has contributed to the disharmony and confusion and overall non-polarization of the planet.
Right.
And I have to wonder if on a mixed polarity planet where everyone there was native, was second density native, if there would be greater coherence between or within each polarity, and less overall global confusion.
Well, I think you're right. I think that the subconscious feeling of all of us is lifetime after lifetime after lifetime experiencing war and empire. We expect it to be that way. We expect somebody to be a leader of the world and take over and then do wrongly, unfairly, so that eventually people rise up against that. And I keep expecting America to rise up against things like the 1973 scandals. Was that what it was? Anyway, whatever date it was, I really thought, well, maybe this is going to be it. Maybe people will take to the streets and it will develop into a full-scale war. You know, everybody's armed. It just is a matter of organization as far as getting a war going. But people don't do that. They are so used to being subdued and put upon by the rulers that they expect.
I believe the woman is from Maine. She is the senator from Maine. I forgot her name. Last night, ABC News, she was interviewed. She's got a book out. Her thesis is the banking system is rigged, and that's why the 1% of the population is gathering 22% of the profit right now. I wish I could remember her name, but I think we check into it, we'll find out. You know, there is some more information coming out about this now.
Is it Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard good things about her.
Yeah, she's great.
Fighting the good fight. Few people.
Well, I think that's what we need to do, is go ahead and fight the good fight as best we can by improving ourselves, by loving ourselves, by forgiving ourselves, and by redeeming ourselves. In that way, we redeem the whole world.
Well, thank you so much, Carla, and thank you so much, JP, for the question. Your mic has been muted. Carla and Jim, I didn't know if you know, but you know how we hear these audio signals from the BTR software that says so many seconds left in the show.
It's time.
The audio will continue beyond the 1 hour for those who want to download it afterwards. So it's not like we get cut off and there's no more. But so to close the show, you've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. To our second caller today, if you want to try back next week, we'll get you in. Sorry we ran out of time today. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we will talk with you then.
I land on an island coasted only so that I see your ghost. I run through a wooded island, chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and a tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day, never find anyone. the planets turn and the old stars die.